welcome to episode 20 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. Everardo is back. How's it going?
Good, guys. How are you?
Very well. Jeff is here as well, as always.
Hello.
Let's get right to it this week. Aaron Baddeley, once thought to be a young gun on the PGA Tour, has finally come through with his first PGA Tour win. Your thoughts?
I'm happy to see it. I mean, we expected him to win a long time ago, so it's nice to see him chalk one up.
Yeah, he had a really solid weekend. He deserved it. I think he played well down the stretch. Played a little better than his competitor.
Is this win going to, do you think it's going to set him off? Set him on a tear? You know, not even necessarily a tear, but, you know, a couple wins a year maybe kind of thing? Or what? He's still very young.
I don't think it's going to give him that much momentum, at least not yet, but at least it gives him some security blanket saying, hey, I do belong out here. I mean, he's already known that, but I think the win secures it more for him.
Okay.
Yeah, a couple of things. I mean, he's got a little bit of a future on the tour now, a little job security for a little while. And also, you know, it's a moment he can look back on. Hey, you know, I made that, what was it, an 8 or 10 footer for the win?
Six. He should be a golf announcer, because they always take those two-footers and tell you they're five-footers.
And he was driving the ball 350 yards all weekend.
That's so, right. It helped him.
Yeah, over the green. But right. I thought he did a good job. Yeah, he's got, it'll settle him down. But
what did you think of Hilton Head? I mean, this is a course that's not long, like some of, like Spyglass Hill and whatnot. Yet the winning score was pretty much the same it was when it started the day on Friday. You know, he shot one or two under there to win it. Really not low scoring. I mean,
no, I loved it. What a great venue. You know, you have a guy like Furyk and Baddeley, who's pretty long. I mean, all the announcers talking about hitting the ball too far, made a big deal of his 6-iron over the trees into, what was it, 15. I think it's a great venue to, you know, showcase good ball striking and putting the ball in the fairway. So excellent place.
I think I also talked about or looked at the fact that, you know, a lot of players or a lot of people will say that there's no shot making left on the PGA Tour anymore. But in the final round, both Aaron Baddeley and Jim Furyk in the final group had shots where they had to hit cuts, they had to hit draws, they had to manufacture shots left and right, high and low, and they were able to, for the most part, pull those off. Shot making apparently is not dead, or at least isn't dead for some people.
Well, if you look at Baddeley's approach shots near the end, too, I mean, kind of a gutsy play to take that same shot every single time.
Tiger Woods is taking some time off. He may not play until the U.S. Open. We'll get into his New Zealand thing later, but basically his dad's not doing so well. We all know that. But he may not play till the U.S. Open. Family apparently very important to Tiger. Are you going to miss him? Is this shocking? Is this a good thing?
No, it's not shocking. This is the inevitable. I mean, we all know that since last year, well, since a long time ago, his dad's been in tough shape. This is just the inevitable. He needs to take the time off. It's unfortunate that it has to be the beginning, middle of the season. Something we all expected, I think.
He has a lot of golf left in him, so, I mean, to take the small amount of time now, it seems like, to be with his family is well worth it.
Is he going to be ready for the U.S. Open? You know, is it going to affect his play? Is he going to be able to prepare?
Well, if he stops playing completely, then no, he won't be prepared. But if he still participates in, like, the Memorial, the Byron Nelson, some of the events that he's been at in the past couple years, and also has a pretty good track record at.
Suggesting that he's not going to play until the U.S. Open, possibly.
Well, but that's what I'm saying, though, is if he does show up to those preseason events that he normally does, maybe as his warm-up, then he should be fine.
Tiger Woods is the strongest mind on PGA Tour, and so I think that really speaks to his potential play at the U.S. Open. It's really going to be interesting to see how he responds. Should this situation with his dad continue, how's he going to deal with the potential of his father's death? And, you know, we're just going to have to see that play itself out.
Worst case, I guess Tiger could put in a call to Bruce Litsky, you know, who was pretty famous for taking weeks and weeks and months off and still coming back and contending in PGA Tour events despite only playing 10 or 15 a year. So very true on the strong mind. We'll see how this pans out. You know, I certainly hope to see Tiger out there, but at the same time, his dad really may not have long left in this world. So best of luck there. Next, we got PGA Hall of Fame. Larry Nelson gets in, Henry Picard gets in, and Vijay Singh, who delayed last year, gets in. Kind of overdue for Larry Nelson.
Yeah, that's what I think.
I think it is too, and he, you know, being overlooked as a Ryder Cup captain this year kind of put a sting in him, but maybe this will kind of soften the blow for him or cheer him up.
Is he going to get the Ryder Cup captainship in 2 years?
He should.
If Tom Lehman makes the team, will they delay Lehman's captainship?
I hope.
Will Lehman make the team?
I say he won't.
Kind of off the topic of Larry Nelson and Henry Picard getting in, but Larry Nelson, a winner of 3 major championships, many have thought he should have gotten in quite some time ago. I'm still of the opinion that the Hall of Fame is a little too easy to get into. The fact that they have to elect one member each year, pretty much from a few different categories, seems to indicate that, you know, Vijay Singh getting in last year, I mean, that's kind of weird. I mean, the guy's still playing, still contending in majors, and here he is in the Hall of Fame.
Maybe we've mentioned this before, but I think that I like the LPGA's approach where there's almost a, you gotta earn your points, and once you've won a certain amount of majors, you won a certain amount of LPGA Tour events, then you're in. I think it would be nice to see maybe Major League Baseball, the PGA Tour, you know, some of these other big sporting venues do the same thing.
Colin Montgomery would not be in because he doesn't have a major. I think that's a requirement on the LPGA Tour. So there you have it. Definitive proof.
So there.
Why Mrs. Doubtfire should not be in the Hall of Fame.
And Colin Montgomery sitting there, oh, you always have to bring me into this.
Always. Sorry, man. We'll be right back after this announcement from Titleist and Chip Shots from Golf Gods. Stay with us.
In the heat of competition, you should really stick to your go-to shot. For me, that's a tight little draw.
Copy your practice swing and don't think about results.
Just take your time, keep everything nice and slow.
When I'm under pressure, I think about my kids.
I think of my kid too.
Keep it simple, play one shot at a time.
Don't be tentative, stay real aggressive.
Make sure and drink lots of water.
Concentrate on concentrating.
Don't think too much.
Just remember to breathe.
And don't panic.
And one more tip,
trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
From the studios of GolfGods.com in Minneapolis, this is Chip Shots, a weekly look at golf equipment news, brought to you by the staff of GolfGods.com, the official online pro shop of TheSandTrap.com.
This week on Chip Shots, buying junior clubs. In the past few weeks, several customers have asked for our opinions about buying juniors equipment, including, do we think it's necessary? While there are no one-size-fits-all answers for everyone, there are a few basic guidelines. 1. Skip the hand-me-down adult clubs with cut-down shafts. While this can certainly be cost-effective, it simply makes the game harder for the youngster to learn. In the formative years, there's no sense in forcing the young player into bad habits caused by overcompensating or making the child suffer through endless worm burners because they can't flex the shaft. 2. The best way to size is by height. When buying age-specific sets, check shaft lengths and compare that to how tall your child is relative to his peers. The sets might be calibrated perfectly, but if your child is tall or short for her age, it might make a big difference. Some sets are adjustable, which can be a good way to go since children tend to grow fast. 3. Putting is great because there's instant gratification. There's no replacement long-term for having a great feel for getting the ball into the hole. 4. Buy age-appropriate goods, which means you need to buy clubs for this season. Don't expect kids to grow into their clubs. Too stiff or too long shafts might hamper development. Also, you might be wasting money by buying an elaborate set for your preschooler. Few children have the coordination, attention span, or desire to hit full shots until they hit grade school. 5. Less is more. A junior player rarely needs a full set of 14 clubs. Up until kindergarten, a set of 4 clubs will suffice. After that, add clubs selectively as different skills are mastered. One last tip. Remember, it's about having fun. While you are anxious to pass along your love of the game, letting kids develop at their own pace can ensure they stick with it for the long haul. Well, that's it for this week's Chip Shots. For more information on juniors clubs, check out the text portion of this week's podcast on thesandtrap.com or visit the golfgods.com website for our comprehensive buying guide. Now back to this week's podcast.
And welcome back. This week in our forum topic of the week, someone asks, did Badly win or did Jim Furyk choke? Your thoughts?
Badly won.
Badly won it.
Did he win badly?
No.
No, he won well. He deserved the win, but you know, this was a great example. This is a great example of what I like to see down the stretch on Sunday. You had two guys neck and neck. Furyk had every opportunity to make some putts for the win, but it turned out that Badly didn't play badly, made the putts, and he deserved the win.
Well, there's some suggestion though that Jim Furyk didn't necessarily choke, but he did kind of gag a little bit. Did miss several putts inside of 8-10 feet, including the birdie putt on the last hole that was 4, 5, 6 feet long. Didn't even touch the hole with it. 20, yeah. Basically didn't put the tournament away. He was one up with a couple holes to go and didn't put it away. So did he gag it away a little bit? Just a little?
It was a mild gag.
A mild
gag. He coughed.
He hiccuped?
Yeah, he shot a 71, so it's not a complete collapse, but it could have been or should have been lower.
I think a lot of people expect Jim Furyk to be the clutch player. There was some suggestion, oh, you know, Furyk's not the, maybe not the player that we all thought he was. Well, no, that's not true. He's still an excellent player, but he didn't do what we expect him to do, which is make some of those key critical putts within that 5 to 12 foot range.
Right. This strikes me as anyone saying that he choked. I mean, maybe, like I said, maybe a little gag, maybe a little hiccup, whatever you want to call it. Just a little. I guess we're all in agreement on that, and we'll be right back with Beating Balls just after this message from Titleist.
When you get in a fairway bunker, choke up on the club a little bit, and I like to aim for the top of the ball.
On long bunker shots, flatten your swing.
You want to feel down in the sand, and then use your instincts.
When you get a plug lie, all you want to do is take a steeper swing and explode down on the ball.
If you want to hit a punch shot, play the ball back in your stance.
When you're in the rough, you're going to want to hit a cut.
One more tip.
Trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And we're back. The first topic this week, Phil Mickelson on top. I, for one, feel bad for Amy, but that's not what they're talking about. Someone here, Tom Lamar, has put Phil Mickelson on top of the rankings. According to Tom Lamar here, he's put Phil Mickelson above Tiger Woods. Cody Thrasher wrote in Thrash Talk this week and also seems to agree that Phil Mickelson is, right now, playing better golf than Tiger Woods. Do you agree?
I don't know. I mean, it's if you look at performance-wise per event or looking at overall...
Define overall. I mean, in the past 3 weeks, obviously, no one can really argue.
Right.
He won the Masters, Tiger didn't. If you go back a year, 2 years, then you start to say, you know, I mean, they look pretty close, and I'd still give the edge maybe to Tiger.
Well, in my estimation, this is a great example of how the media likes to make generalizations from such small details. Tiger admittedly didn't putt as well as Tiger putts on Sunday at the Masters, and Tiger put a couple of balls in the water in the third round, and okay, fine, but golf is a game of misses, and Phil Mickelson is not a better golfer than Tiger Woods. That's been proven out over time. There's some mitigating factors here. First of all, golf is a game of misses, and you're not going to be able to putt 100% right every time. And also, you know, Tiger's in a tough time with his dad, so does that have something to do with it? Probably. Phil Mickelson is not the better golfer.
And I don't know that you can look at the number of PGA Tour wins each has had in the past year or two, but it seems to me that a lot of Phil's wins come in lesser events. Obviously not the Masters or the PGA Championship, but the week before the Masters, very few players were playing at the Bell South. Very few top-tier players play at the FBR or even the Pebble Beach. Tiger skips that. So a lot of Phil's wins come when Tiger and a lot of other top players don't seem to be in the fields.
Well, if I could play some devil's advocate, Phil was on fire for a couple of weeks. I mean,
he was
winning by 13 strokes, winning the Masters. I have to give all credit to him. He won those tournaments. He did a good job. But, again, general overall
grand scheme of things, yeah.
Yeah.
Phil is streaky is the thing. So he does get hot for a while, and that probably what helps fuel the debate a little bit is, yeah, he goes for a run on a tear where he, like last year at the beginning of the season, but he's not, I don't think he's as consistent as Tiger.
Okay, well, this is Beating Balls, and we've beat that one to death, so we'll move on quickly to our next topic, which is yet another overreaction. This one's titled, Could Woods Become Just Another Middle-Aged Bogeyman? Basically, Tiger Woods is a has-been. This guy's smoking some ganja that has not yet been invented, because... That's some strong stuff.
Yeah, well, the comment he makes is that, you know, that his putter is going south or could potentially go south. This is just the kind of stuff that you put in the National Enquirer.
There we go. Well enough said that we're moving on. The San Jose Mercury News brings up the whole challenges to Tiger thing again. Where are they? You know, every time someone under the age of 30 wins a tournament, people ask, why haven't these guys stepped up? Have they? Are they going to?
Well, I think this goes back to the fact that everybody wants to believe that there's going to be another Tiger Woods. And, I mean, let's look at this. In every generation, you have a standout athlete, whether it's Bobby Jones, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus. Tiger Woods is Tiger Woods. There's not another Tiger Woods. It's going to take a really, really special guy to come in there and do exactly what Tiger did in his 20s.
Right. Well, despite the flip-flop in age, Phil Mickelson seems to be playing the Tom Watson to Tiger Woods playing Jack Nicklaus. But even still, the press seems just have to force things a little bit. The last one we talked about with Phil being ranked ahead of Tiger by that guy. Mm-hmm. Tiger Woods, he's going to New Zealand for Stevie Williams' wedding. Apparently he's already, I think he's already given him his wedding present the last two Ford championships at Doral there.
Yeah. That's a nice little gift.
Pair of $300,000 cars. I don't know, but he's in New Zealand. While he's there, he's going to take place in a car race. Is this a smart thing for Tiger to be doing? I mean, racing in a car race? I don't know. You know, look what's happened to his caddy last year.
You know what was funny is they actually asked Stevie about that last year, if Tiger would ever be in a car, and he started chuckling, saying, I don't think you'd ever find Tiger in a race car. You know, 1 year later, we find him in a race car.
And yet, he also said that he'll get him in a race car sooner or later. Don't he's worry, kind of an one day I'll get you in one of those things, he said.
He's kind of an adventure sports person, so why not? I mean, his favorite activity is spearfishing, so.
His scuba dives? I think it says here that he's one of, Woods will head one of 2 5-man teams. So he's only going to be out there with one other guy.
For 12 laps or so.
The odds of them getting in any kind of trouble are slim to none. Speaking of spearfishing here, Greg Norman the Shark, that's a nice segue there, isn't it?
Yeah. Wow,
has invited Annika Sorenstam to the Shark Shootout, which is now known as the Some Sponsor Here Shootout. Not quite a PGA Tour event, you know, silly season kind of event thing. She's playing with the men again after saying that she was kind of done with that. What do you think?
Well, I think it's interesting. Norman said in January 2004, I think the rightful place is that women play on their tour and we play on ours. And so I think what we have here is the Shark, the businessman, realizing that if Annika's in the event, we're going to have a little more money come in. And it's an off-season event, so that's where he's going with this.
Okay.
That's the way I look at it, too. It's an off-season. It's a silly season game.
Well, is she going to... She'll be teeing off from the men's tees, I presume, but I think it'd be interesting to have them, maybe one female team in there, playing from proportionally sized set of tees.
If she can get another pink skirt to Fred Fung.
There we go.
That's right.
Fred could tee up from way up there. People are complaining about the walking around Augusta National. This is... let's not get out of hand here, because, you know, people complaining about walking around Augusta National has its own tone to it, you know. Give horse in the mouth.
Hello!
Kind of comes to mind, but at the same time, you know, you look forward to something, and yet you get there, and now all these trees or something are in your way. Problem, you know, I mean, there have been a lot of talk about the second shots on 11. People would sit in the landing area, and now they put all those trees in there, and you can't see anybody hitting the ball.
Well, this is, and we'll provide the link, of course, in the podcast, but this is Gary Van Sickle's way of creating more buzz about the lengthening of Augusta. And so apparently on several holes, you don't have the view that you once had. I agree that they shouldn't have made such drastic changes to this golf course. We talked about this last week. Charge-proofing the course, and the length has affected the whole field. Whether or not this is a story, I can't really say.
Hootie Johnson, I remember a comment someone asked him about not having any rough and letting the balls run into the pine straw and all that stuff, like I had talked about on previous podcasts. And his answer was basically like, well, we hadn't really ever thought of that, basically, or something like that. I mean, it was astounding that he would say that, because it implied that they actually gave no thought to anything other than put more trees, make it longer, grow some rough. So I wonder if he considered the patrons walking around Augusta National when he put these changes into place. Or whether
he probably didn't.
He doesn't seem to have done that. So we'll see if there are changes made next year. Who knows? It's a living, breathing organism, as David Faraday
it's
said,
alive!
Said several times on the air.
It's more alive than Hootie, though.
There we go. Winged foot. Site of this year's U.S. Open is undergoing some changes. Tell us about them, Jeff.
Obviously, one of the biggest changes is one of the par threes. And what's the hole number? It's been stretched to 243 yards.
Number three.
Yeah, number three. So that is, whew. I mean, hey, from my perspective, I don't want any part of that hole. But, you know, for the tour guys, maybe they can handle it. Who knows? But this is obviously in line with what we see.
We saw how they handled the 240-yard sixth hole, I believe, at Augusta, and that was playing to an average of about 3.5.
Ate their lunch.
Yeah, and it was slightly downhill, so not quite playing 240. This one, from what I know, is flat. There are going to be some players hitting driver in there if the wind gets in their face at all.
And at a U.S. Open venue, when basically the USGA, you know, affixes their teeth into their head,
it says here, Billy Casper, and I know Ben Hogan did this on some course, basically laid up and then got up and down all 4 days. So basically playing it almost like a par four, and he birdied it. You know, just lay up short. That way you're in some kind of fairway instead of 8-inch rough. Pitch it on and take a putt. I mean, if you average 3.5 there for the week, you probably don't lose any shots to the field. So
right.
Be interesting to see how that hole plays out. Big Break, episode 10. Becky, gone again. Surprised to see her go?
No, it was...
Well, it's just because I know, because I don't think she still had found her groove. Still looked like her swing was a little bit off. And I mean, really, she was gone for 2 days. She was still on the island, so pretty much whatever game she showed up with is what she had.
Right. Her swing looked a little funny to me. I mean, it almost looked like a reverse pivot in a way or something. I don't know. She's not the most smooth swing you've ever seen.
So. Well, she takes it back so low, it does look unusual. I kind of had higher expectations for her coming back. I thought she would have had a little more edge, so to speak. But I thought it was a good episode. I love the way that Jeannie kind of put it to Ashley there,
Julie,
and backed it up with some game. Who was that?
Julie.
Short little Julie.
Yeah.
Yeah, Julie. She put it to Ashley, which was kind of funny to watch. Yeah.
Well, we were trying to figure out on the forum who won, because they get free entry and free transportation all Futures Tour events. Unfortunately, they've only had 3 Futures Tour events this year, and so far Ashley and Jeannie have played in all 3. Ashley, of course, winning the second one. There's another one going on this weekend, so we'll have to check out to see who's playing in that, but the early info would seem to indicate that either Julie or Jeannie or Ashley win, because they've played all the Futures Tour events this year. And
yeah,
of course,
you kind
of
knew
taping ended back in December or something. So
you kind of knew Kim was out when she when they announced that she had gotten the head coaching job at one of the colleges. They had announced that back at the PGA show.
Also that. So Kim's out. Julie doesn't even have... She's not even a member of the Futures Tour, so I'm assuming she's out. Jeannie or Ashley apparently will win the big break. You heard it here first.
All right.
Or on our forum a couple days ago. The Old Course will host the Open in 2010. Shocking. Shocking.
Naturally.
Goodness. This just naturally. In. The Old Course will host the U.S. Open, the British Open in 2015, too.
Oh my gosh!
Wait, this just in. The Old Course will host the British Open in 2020.
Well, we all knew. I mean, it's on the rotation, so yeah. It's no shock. I mean, it's going to be the 150th anniversary, so yeah, of course.
Great. Good news. Okay, moving on. The USGA has put out a couple position papers on distance. Fred Funk has said for a couple years now that players who swing a certain speed, like 115, 120 miles an hour, get a certain boost out of the ball. I don't have much to say about this because I linked to it, but what are your thoughts?
This is actually pretty big news, I think, because this has been a huge myth that, once you get up into a certain swing speed, the Pro V1, which is the biggest,
All the top-tier balls. Say.
Yeah, okay, so, all the top-tier balls, that somehow, you're able to just get into the core of the ball, and you get added distance, and it exponentially, you get more distance exponentially. So this is pretty big, I think, a pretty big revelation that it doesn't actually help higher swing speeds.
Ever heard of?
If you look at something like coefficient restitution, which they measure, and even they've said that you can't maximize it to a certain potential. Yeah, if a person swings 80 or a person swings 100, you're going to see benefits, but after a while, it's just going to flatline out, so it's a great myth.
And they talk about the core of the ball and stuff, but the core in, say, the Pro V1X or the Pro V1 is 1.55 inches. The ball is 1.68. So it's not like the mantle and the outer shell of the ball, they're very thin. You don't have to do much to get into the core. Really dispelling the myth that balls get a boost once you hit a certain speed, and done with science, fact, the scientific process. I'm going to download and read the PDF because I studied science and I know what all those squiggly lines and stuff mean. Once again, fact versus emotion seems to be the dividing line in this debate.
And center in this stage is always a guy like Fred Funk, who, Eric, you pointed out in the first sentence of your article, which at 49 years of age and 5'8", it's not altogether shocking that he is the shortest hitter. He's 49 years old, and so of course the younger guys are going to be hitting it farther. Of course, it's no shock.
That does it for this week's episode of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. Thanks once again for joining us, and thank you, Everardo and Jeff, for joining us as well. We'll be back next week with episode 21, because we can count.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.